Well, welcome everybody. How do you like St. Paul so far? You realize that it's a violation of the 8th Amendment to the Constitution. It's cruel and unusual punishment. So for those of you that have to live here and don't have to live in California or somewhere warm, please feel a little bit sympathetic towards when you leave here. Well, I'm going to talk about growth here and tell you a little bit about where we're going. In many respects, the presentation is going to be a reprise of last year. I'm not sure that there's going to be a lot of new news, but hopefully there's going to be some encouraging news. Here's the basic lineup. It really, the plan boils down to four elements. It's rebuilding R&D because we think R&D is just such a key piece of our puzzle. It's always been the heartland of 3M. It's always been what made 3M great. It's always been what produced the sort of wonderful product portfolio that we have today and the kind of brands that we've built over many, many years. So this is a key piece of the puzzle for us. We've done a lot more acquisitions because we think acquisitions are very important to complement what we're doing in our core. I'll tell you a little bit later, you know, just remind you they do a lot more than just build volume. Now, there's a lot of money going to go into these sorts of things, and so we need to finance that growth, and we're going to finance it through supply chain reengineering. And again, I'm going to expand that in just a few minutes. And then in some senses, this is a kind of a bit of a back to the future element. We're going to try to rebuild a much more responsive culture, in many respects, the kind of culture that existed in this company prior to 1990. So here's the mission. Still, growth is our long-term fundamental belief. We think this is the place that we create a lot more shareholder value over the coming years. So in a similar way to what Pat did, he put down the questions that we asked, and I've sort of, in a sense, put some of the answers down here. What's changed, really, since we talked to you about 18 months ago? Well, when I came to the company, clearly we had some slow growth, and it really didn't take us a long time to identify the causes of that slow growth, and then also identify the ways to accelerate it. And we told you about that 18 months ago. We told you what we were planning to do, and from that time onward, even though a lot of people didn't always necessarily think we could do it, we just went off and did it. We sorted out the supply chain, or at least took steps along the pathway to sort out the supply chain. We built plants. We're doing the acquisitions that we talked about to help seed further growth in various locations. We invested in R&D. A lot more money has gone into R&D and fixing the things that were broken. We just kind of went off and did what we said we were going to do. Interesting difference to sometimes what happens. Then the question is, as you know, all strategy development is a sort of a bit of a Bayesian process. You know, you take a step, you have a new vista, you learn new things. Things are either clearer or not clearer, but usually a lot clearer. So what is clearer to us now? The absolute vital importance of the supply chain initiative is absolutely clear to us now. It really is cascading effects right across the company. The way it impacts our efficiency, the way it impacts our working capital usage, the way it impacts our operating earnings, the way it impacts our growth, the way it impacts our ability to serve our customers. It's an issue of vital importance to our company. The other thing I think that as we stood back and reflected on what was happening in the company was the importance of the traditional core of 3M. And we'll see a slide a little bit later on this, but we realize that, you know, we can't just put big bets out there. We can't just bet on Aldara, for example, or some other breakthrough technology. There has to be much more to the way that 3M grows than that. And so the vital importance of 3M's traditional core was very clear to us as we went forward. I think a sort of a new discovery for many of us in the company, although we knew they were out there, was this concept of 3M's enduring franchises. How did we get them? How do we make them? And how do we keep them? And finally, and Pat spoke about this just briefly, the fact that we have found a way to finally balance growth, return on invested capital, and margin. Not one nor the other has been damaged by our quest to push growth up a little bit. And here's how we've gone about doing it. Obviously, there's my piece on growth over here on the left-hand side, protect the core and adjacency build-out, and a whole bunch of different ways of getting that done. It's through new technologies, briefly mentioned a minute ago, new products, M&A, and a whole bunch of other things that we have breakthrough opportunities and some other things. So growth on the one hand, on the side of this sort of seesaw, teeter-totter, as you might call it. But let's not forget, in a headlong quest for growth, you have to make sure you can fund it, you make sure you retain discipline in the company, and that is through focus on our gross margin, factory costs, making sure we don't give away a lot of price. This is a balanced equation for us in going forward, growth and operational excellence. John stressed it, Pat stressed it. Now I'm going to pause for a moment and have a little bit of, if you don't mind, a little bit of professorial discussion about the issue of growth. Now you folks are on the consumption side of these kind of messages. You have companies that say, well, you know, I know we've only grown at 2% in the past 5 years or past 10 years, but we've got a mission now to grow at 8. And you have to ask yourself the question, well, how is it that these companies going to transform that? Because if you think about it, for a company like 3M, and there are many other companies in the S&P 500, in fact, in other parts of the world, that fit this mold, if you participate in a broad enough piece of the economy, why is it you expect to grow more than the economy? And to be able to do so is actually quite challenging. But there are, in fact, some ways you can do it, and there are three listed on here in my sort of light blue here. The only ways you can really do it is you have to create markets that are growing at growth rates consistent with the growth rate expectations you have. In other words, if you're in a 3% growth market, you have to try to find a way to make the segments that you participate in that market grow at 6, if that's what the number turns out to be. Because if you don't, eventually you'll acquire so much share that eventually you saturate. Simple challenge of mathematics. Another alternative you can use is to penetrate new segments, either strongly emphasize international or go down the pyramid a little bit to try to find a bigger market, so at least you get some kind of pseudo pipeline fill impact. Or, and maybe this is the best way of all, is you've got to move and point your resources to markets which have an average growth rate which is higher. If you expect to grow at 6, you ought to be putting more and more resources in markets that are growing at 6. That's just the way you have to solve this particular problem. I only tell you this to sort of get you to understand the real challenge it is for a company, not just like ours, but many companies out there who aspire to higher growth rates, and how you go about doing this is not a slam dunk. It never is. It requires immense creativity, immense energy, immense focus, and immense application of resources. So here it is. Here's a, just to sort of give you a little bit of indicator, here's a typical market that we own about 9% of. That market's growing at 3%. We start at year zero. What happens if we attempt to grow at 10%? Well, year five, you've got 13% market share. In year 10, you've got 17% market share. In year 15, you've got 24% market share. In year 20, you have 34% market share. And by the way, what has to happen here is all of these other people that occupy these markets have to be really kind and convenient to you and surrender their market to you as you're doing this. So this is a tough gig if you don't have other mechanisms that grow the growth rate underlying. And this is really what you need to do. You need to find ways to grow the underlying markets at rates much higher than what you formerly had. So excuse the sort of professorial bit there, but it's interesting how few people really understand the dynamics of this particular issue. So the essentials of 3M's growth plan. We've talked about this before. I told you at least at this part of the presentation there won't be a lot of new news. It's about rebuilding and extending 3M's traditional core. Why is that? Because it's the place where you have the lowest risk and the fastest results. Invest in the future. Because if you don't invest in the future, guess what? There won't be one. Or it'll be somebody else's future, because they'll have invented the future that you thought you were going to have. You have to find ways to get close to the customers. So you've got to find ways to lubricate and speed up the supply chain. And I've spoken at many meetings, many conferences, where I've given you my little Rubik's Cube diagrams to show you what actually happens inside 3M. And we're working at rebuilding that. Now, if rebuilding and extending the core is sticking to your knitting, of course, you've got to be very careful that knitting is a growth business, if that's what you're going to do. So you have to go out and say, you know what, let me find ways to experiment with some new markets. Now, many of you know that I'm a fisherman, and of course, if you continue to fish in the same ponds and the same rivers, you're going to catch most of the same fish. So this is some new ponds you have to go fishing to see where else you might do. And this, by the way, is something that was really great about 3M. This is what 3M did naturally for many, many years, for 30 or 40 years. This is the heartland of 3M. And greater emphasis on international market growth, because for the moment at least, those markets are growing much faster than the markets back here in the United States. And Inger is actually going to give a section. He's going to be my guest speaker in this presentation a little bit further on. Now, here's just a straight visual. It's a chart we showed you last year. It's a chart we've showed in a number of different investor presentations. No, nothing new here. Grow the current core business, work on complementary acquisitions, build new businesses, and international growth. And then drilling down on the core piece of this, growing the current core, a lot of stuff underneath here just explaining what we mean. Extending the core, just if you take a look at this little icon here, just drilling down a little bit into the top of the upper middle market. Invent a new future, mentioned that briefly. There is, by the way, some subtleties in inventing a new future. If you only want to invent a future which is about identical to other people, you'll not do better than about average. So you have to find some way to inject that extra spark, that extra level of creativity, that extra sprinkle of magic dust to make sure that you leapfrog the competition and keep well ahead of them. So there are some subtleties in even invent a new future. And on build broad long-term competencies, when I first wrote this, I felt like I was a lawyer. You know, I was trying to sort of say something and avoiding saying quite what I meant. But if you think about our optical film business, for example, you have to stop and step back and ask yourself, what business am I actually in? If we make optical films, are we in the film business or are we in the optics business? If you have a truck and you buy melons in Texas and ship them to New York City, are you in the truck business or the trucking business? Well, I think you're in the trucking business, not the truck business. It's the same way. If the value added is optics, you're in the optics business, not necessarily the film business. That's what this meant. And we have wonderful optical businesses right across our company, so that ought to become a focus for us going forward. What have we been doing? Well, I think we've kind of moved the ball down the pitch quite a bit, certainly in reinvigorating R&D. And by the way, when you go out here and you see there's an area out here where you can talk to our scientists, I would ask them, if I were you, I would be bold and say, okay, does it feel any different? Are we focusing more on R&D? Are we actually making a step forward? You know, ask them. Of course, we carefully prep them to give you the answers. We haven't actually. I'm only joking. Never said a word. I think they'll tell you they feel much, much better about what we're doing in R&D. And you can see it in the numbers. There's an 11% increase in R&D in 2006. And I think that was it's up over a 5 or 6% increase in R&D the year before. Again, Inger will tell you about accelerated international growth, doing a great job there, opening new marketplaces and really capitalize on some of the great growth that exists outside. Better supply chain. We've invested over 28% more in 2007, or will have, than we did in 2006. And that, I think, was on top of another 15% over the year before. So we're actually putting our money in the places where we need it. We have so far opened 5 plants. It actually shows you 4 here, but we've got one missing off the list. A new respirator plant in Korea. A new optical conversion plant in Poland. A new CHIM, this is a consumer home improvements blue tape facility in Canada. A new industrial tape facility in China. And actually a new Filtreat plant in Mexico. These are now opened up and running. And in the current year, we seeded more growth with acquisitions. We've done 15 acquisitions this year to add to the 18, I think it was, we did last year. So 33 acquisitions have been done in the last 2 years. Nice little tuck-ins, all lubricating the markets, lubricating technology, and getting in places where we weren't formerly present. Here's the capital expenditure. Historically, Pat had this chart down here. And just shows you what was happening in our company. We were driving this down. And even when we began to sort of start to reinvest, most of the investment went into optical rather than other things. And a little bit of investment up here on the supply chain. So since sort of roughly 2005, a 25% CAGR increase in capital expenditure. Let's speak now a little bit about the elements of growth. Very simple flow diagram, no surprises here. Here's 3M's periodic table up here, the kind of broad-scale technological capability that we have, almost 50 of these capabilities that come together with the voice of the market. And by the way, even this is somewhat new in 3M. For the most part, we were always a technology push company. Now this has become more of a feature of what we're doing. We run both of these inputs through a new product introduction process, and coming out the back end are lovely new products, great products, that look actually relatively mundane and ordinary, but in point of fact have immense amounts of technology embedded in them in ways that you would hardly ever imagine, and again, you'll get a chance to see that when you go outside. So here's those self-same technology platforms. Here's our periodic table. And you know, classically, what we will try to do is link in sometimes unusual or uncommon ways, we'll link technologies in here into applications in the marketplace. It's another sort of mix-and-match capability that 3M has that has made this company what it is today. Now, if there's a core of 3M, there's almost a backbone to the core. And the backbone to the core are these. Ceramics, adhesives, various materials, films, micro-replication, and non-woven materials. And this is the place where we will put the vast majority of our R&D dollars. This is where the backbone of the core is in 3M. Let's talk about, for a minute, about the oldest business of 3M. You know, abrasives. Well, it's clearly, obviously, very boring. You know, it's been around for 104, 105 years. It's obviously not something that would really excite you. But actually, if you thought that, you would be wrong. If you take a look at this business in 2003, relatively old products, the operating margin at that time in that business in 2003 was 12%. The return on invested capital was 16%, and the growth rate was about 1%. And Rosa Miller, I think, I'm not sure if Rosa's in the audience, but Rosa Miller and Chris Holmes have done just an utterly magnificent job of reinventing this business with the help of the people from the labs. A whole range of new technologies that, again, you'll get a chance to see some of them. And this business now, the oldest business in 3M, has an operating income margin forecast in 2012. By the way, it's not that much different today, a 25%. Return on invested capital of 45%, and it's not much less than that today. And the current growth rate this year is 7.8%. And this is what can happen. This is what you can do if you recognize the value of your core and you invest in that core, protect it, defend it, and grow it. This is what can happen. You heard me last year talk about what characterizes 3M. And I told you that what characterized 3M. 3M is a company that makes backings and coatings. You know, the coatings can be all sorts of different things. The backings can be all sorts of different things. And we put them together to make new products. But then what we do is we transform the surface of those products with this manufacturing process we call micro-replication. And we do that in many, many places across 3M. But the next level, the next reinvention of the reinvention is this thing, nanotechnology. We have many, many products that are in the marketplace today that use these kind of technologies, and in particular, hard coatings, nanomaterial hard coatings. This is actually a window film, a little bit like the films you put on an LCD television. This is about 450 layers of film here, which is coated with a hard nanotechnology hard coat. You'll actually see this product when you go downstairs and looking in Brad's business in the drug delivery business, you'll actually see these micro needles that replace syringes for the future. And it's the same kind of technologies that we've used many times, many places across 3M. I also get asked the question, what are the folks in the labs thinking? What are they feeling? Are they happy? Are they now re-engaged? And the short answer to that question is yes. Now, without me torturously taking you through every single line of this particular slide, you've got it in front of you. Let me just tell you, the engagement that I have had, Fred has had with the labs has been utterly first class, and to their great credit, the people at 3M have responded. They are a wonderful group of people. extraordinarily talented. Of course, like many talented and very able people, they can be a little temperamental from time to time. But you know what? They're our temperamental people, and they're our brilliant people, and we love them, and we have worked very, very hard to re-engage them. And if I just summarize this message here, if you go back to 2003, we took an R&D opinion survey. And, you know, the results weren't actually that bad. The top two box approval scores at that time were about 70%. We repeated that survey just this year, actually, 2007, and our top two box scores had moved up to 90. So it's one indicator of the reignition of the spirit of innovation inside 3M. In the end, though, it all boils down to new products. And this is a slide that will show you about what's happening on new product introductions. These are the forecast new products. They're being introduced as we speak, going through to 2009. So here you see this, whatever this color is, sort of a maroon color, are the 2005 launches. This is the five-year wave that we plot in our company. And here's what we're forecasting for the 2006 launches, the 2007 launches, the 2008 launches, and a little bit of 2009 on top. And the interesting thing to notice here is if you take a look from this year onwards and look at what's happening in this particular column, 75% of what we're forecasting for new product introductions are already launched. So we think we've got reason to expect that this is really gathering momentum. And the 2007 new products are expected to deliver over 33% more than our historical average. We really have focused on this because this company is about technology and about new products. Now, it's not only about technology. That's the sort of the sending end of the pipe. But if you think about what's going on at the receiving end of the pipe, this is in sales and it's in marketing. And here's some of the sorts of things we've been doing in that area too. Developed a lot of tools and training for launch execution. We've trained something like 8,000 people on commercialization of new products. So we've tried to stop some of the things that we did in the past, which are these kind of launch and abandon programs, and have really focused on driving the introduction of products that have been released for manufacture. And if we go down here, these are the top 10 product launches in the last 2 years have increased between the first half of 06 and 07 by 45%. So again, we think there's momentum building here. We think this is a good introduction, a good indication, I should say, that we're moving forward pretty well with this. So now the obvious question is, do you think it's working? Well, you know, we think it is. If you take a look at the period 03 to 05, we were growing at about 6%. A point of that was from acquisition. These are just rounded, these, and 5% from organic. We've moved the organic needle by a full percentage point in essentially just one window of increment. And this is a big deal. This is a huge value creator, and acquisitions have added something to it. So we've moved from 6 to 8 in that period of time. So, and we've done this, by the way, in some fairly challenging economic times, and we've done it while we were reinventing some parts of the company on top of that. So oil and housing headwinds plus some slowing GDP in the US and Asia, we've done it even with that. So let's just, stressing this new product issue, let's just talk about some of the platforms that 3M, we have hundreds and hundreds of these, and I'm just going to list just a few of them. One new platform is optically clear adhesives. The application here, you see a couple of them, I think this is a blackjack telephone. This looks like a Jebson navigation system in an airplane. And they're used in these stacks of films and glass. And of course, just like, you know, it's quite clear that the films themselves have to be optically clear. But maybe you'd never thought also that you have to have some similar properties in the adhesives. So we're the world's leaders in optically clear adhesives, and we have these things in many, many applications, some that we were not allowed to talk about, great new platform for 3M. One of the great unsung heroes in 3M, and something that's really going to come to the fore in due course with energy, I think, are window films, Prestige window films. I mentioned earlier, this is a multi-layer optical film. I don't know if your eyes are good enough to see some of that gradation in there. And we can actually tune these layers. We can actually tune the layers here, the properties of the layers, to reject all but blue light, all but red light, reflect all white light, and we can actually produce different kinds of mirrors or different kinds of colours with these sorts of things. And you'll actually, if you look out this building on these windows on this backside, they're all covered with this kind of film. You would never know it, and yet they will essentially completely eliminate IR and UV pickup. Absolutely magnificent product for 3M. An old technology recast now, non-woven materials, but using now natural fibres rather than chemicals. And applications in cleaning materials, in filtration materials. These are great new product for 3M and really selling like hotcakes. So, again, something pretty old recast in a new light. Going back to the abrasive business, we talked about the reinvention of that abrasive business. This is how it was done. Primarily through micro-replication of these Trizact products, diamonds for grinding very, very difficult materials, modern materials, and again, a great new platform for 3M. One I like here, because I'm an electrical engineer, this is the ACCR, the aluminum conductor composite reinforced. These fibers in the center here you see are ceramic fibers embedded in a aluminum oxide matrix. And you can put about 2 to 3 times the power down these as you can a conventional cable. Our challenge here is trying to get the manufacturing cost down. If we can have one more breakthrough, this business can grow very, very rapidly. It's, right now, it's a small business, $20, $30 million. But it's the kind of business that with maybe one more significant manufacturing breakthrough, we can get up into certainly multiples of hundreds of millions, and maybe even a lot more than that. One I like as well, see my little eggs over here? These are little, we call them glass bubbles. And we can make these glass bubbles in all kinds of shapes and sizes with different wall thicknesses, with different gases inside, and completely transform the performance of materials. Slurries, cast materials like injection molded parts. And this is the only company, 3M is the only company in the world that has the know-how to build these things. These are just an absolute gold mine for us, candidly speaking. Great new technology. So, okay, you know, I mean, we all have the impression. We know the great technology base of 3M, and we know many of the brands. And the question I think we ask ourselves, and I'm sure you ask us from time to time, is what is it that really makes 3M so resilient a company? Why is it that we succeed where others fail? Why is it we sometimes seem to be inoculated against downturns when other people aren't? What is it that's about this company that that speaks to that issue? Well, it's these enduring franchises. Now, before we tell you what we should do and do, let's tell you what we occasionally don't do. This is typically a market that 3M invents. You know, we create the technology. We typically, this might be 60, 80, 100 patents that build a product. Eventually, we launch it in the marketplace. And we grow it very, very nicely. And then after a period of years, who knows what it is, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, perhaps the intellectual property becomes a little old. We start seeing some stuff coming off patent. And what happens next? Well, it's the classic stuff. Competitors enter the marketplace. They nearly always enter the marketplace from the bottom. And for this may have been a business for us, 35 points operating margin, maybe 40 points operating margin. And these ne'er-do-well people come in at the bottom and have the audacity to want to take this business at 20 points operating margin. It's really quite unkind of them. And so what we do is we retreat. We'll move back up the pyramid a little bit, say, oh, no, we can't take that margin-dilutive business. And so guess what? They get emboldened. They move a little bit further. And eventually we get pushed out of our markets. And I think Mo has got a chart in one of his presentations that shows something like 19 or 20 different businesses that 3M created where we did just this. We just progressively backed away and exited. This is not the way that you build enduring franchises. This is not the way we do it. And so if you want to get growth, the first thing you've got to do is to stop doing this. Plug in the leaky bucket. You know the analogy, if you're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and there's a hole in the bottom of the boat, what's the first thing you have to learn how to do? Bail. So when we're talking about going into the upper middle market, we're not just talking about trying to find ways to growth, to get growth. We're actually trying to find a way to draw a line in the sand and saying we are not going to retreat. This is our market, we created it, and we're going to defend it. So it's about as much about bulwarking and defending the markets that we created as it is just about growing. So let's now talk about what we actually do when it's successful. And ask ourselves the question, what similarities do Scotch Tape, Post-it Notes, Scotch Brite, Trizact, and many other franchise products that 3M has? What similarities do they have? Well, typically 3M invented the technology. We were the originators. We serve all markets from bottom to top. Interesting concept here is usually our customers make more money on these products than we do. And when you think about this, you say, well, why would you do that, George? If you've got such power in the market, why would you do that? If you think about how you solve three simultaneous equations together, have a product that's great for the consumer, have a product which is great for the distributor, and a product which is great for 3M. That's how you make this kind of thing happen. You don't get these sorts of things by being greedy. And we built these things up over many, many years, and as I mentioned, we serve the market from the bottom to the top. And we have tremendous market power. We have the world-leading brand, typically. And something we also do here is we never, ever, ever abuse that privilege. We continue to innovate. We continue to drive out costs. And we share that bounty with our customers. That's what we do. And then, in turn, it gets shared with the consumer. So we behave in a consumer-friendly manner. And that is what, over time, builds these great franchises. This is the kind of pattern that follows. And here's maybe one of the best examples, Scotch Tape. I don't know what your experience is of people that work in the consumer market with the big boxes. They're tough customers. They really know what they want. They're in a tough market themselves. But our people at 3M, Mo Nazari and his people, they are the best account managers, the best managers of price laddering I've ever seen in my entire career. They are absolutely, utterly magnificent at this. And so they serve all market segments, bottom to top, going from this little sort of 50-cent private label piece right up to this little gun dispenser. This is, I think, 50 cents, and this is nearly $10. And we serve everything in between. We have great aesthetic design. It's sort of moved from here up to these lovely things that we have. Absolutely superb management of price and value laddering, because if you don't get the management of the price and value laddering right, you're going to be in trouble. It will slip away from you. World-class delivery. These folks deliver typically 99% plus on time in full. When a customer, Walmart, Target, whatever it would be, want our stuff, it is there when they want it. Outstanding account management. You know, sometimes people get confused over account management. They think it's just about me having a relationship with the CEO of Walmart or the CEO of Staples. It isn't. It is at every single level of interface in an organization. To be successful at this, that's what you have to do. Again, it is the world's leading brand, consumer-friendly technologies, and I just repeat what I said earlier, that our customers make more money on this stuff than we do. This is a classic example of how to build an enduring franchise. We've done this in more places than you might think, by the way. We originally invented this. This is the traffic safety business, this is road signs. We originally started off with this engineering-grade material, I think maybe 40 years ago. And, you know, we lost the patents, stuff was coming in at the bottom. And what we did is we pushed this down to the bottom and reinvented it on the top. And now, today, we are the absolute gold standard, the platinum brand, the leaders in this market of reflective signs. If you see a really great reflective sign pretty much anywhere in the United States and many places in the world, it's made by 3M. Now, this concept, though, of enduring franchises, it needs some subtlety for different kind of applications, different markets, whether the market is developed or developing, or whether the franchise strength is known or unknown. And I'm not going to go through every single one of these, but this is the classic one you've just seen us talking about, where you have a developed market and a developed brand strength, and you sort of penetrate into the core to try to build a franchise. Different ways of doing it, different strokes for different folks. One size doesn't fit all. So we think about this in different ways depending on the application. Another question that we sometimes ask ourselves, and I'm sure you ask yourselves, is what is it? Why is it that 3M is successful in some places? Why are they so successful? Well, the solid blue here is typically what a market pattern looks like for us when we are successful. It's a market size that's in, it's moderate size, $1 to $10 billion. We don't get in giant markets, and we don't typically get in very small markets. The market structure is discrete. In other words, it might be a dental market where it's an individual proprietor who's making a decision on our product. The growth rates are moderate, maybe not huge, but moderate. The margin is attractive. It fits our needs. It uses a lot of technology that come together, that we bolt together to make a success. There's often, not in all cases, but there's often regulation, so medical, aerospace, and things like that. And it spans multiple nations. This is the kind of classic pattern that you see of businesses which is successful for 3M. Now, of course, this is changing. I think if we show this chart next year, you might see some yellows on here. And so this is evolving. But this is classically the pattern of characteristics that you see in a successful 3M business, in an enduring franchise. Now, there's lots of them. It's not just in consumer and office. It's not just in traffic safety. They're all over the place in 3M. They're in dental. They're in our OH&ES business. They're in our consumer commercial graphics business. They're in consumer and office. They're all over the place in this company. I don't know exactly how many of them are. There may be 40 of these kind of enduring franchises that are in 3M. And it's that diversity, that kind of reliability that provides the great dependability of 3M. And even though you have a franchise, it doesn't mean you can walk away from it, because franchises can erode. A little bit of sort of theoretical stuff here. In our company, we have markets that may last 30 years, and we have markets that may last 30 weeks. And we have everything in between. Electronics, very, very rapid decay if you don't invest in the business. Less so in industrial. In fact, in abrasives, some of these products might be 30 years long. And so, but in all cases, an observation is that if you want to build an enduring franchise, you must invest in this piece of the marketplace. You cannot build an enduring franchise by being sat up on the top of the mountain. So let's now talk about this in the context of our optical franchise and what we're going to try to do there. Most of you know there are four elements. There are handhelds, monitors, laptops, and LCD TVs. In our really high-performance films, we're very well favored there, places where you've got battery power and you want low battery usage but bright displays. We're king of the hill in that particular area. In places where you have a plug-in device like a television, to some degree like a monitor, we're not king of the hill, but we have a great value proposition, which is lower energy usage. And over time, in the coming near future, I think, that's going to be a great thing for us to leverage. There are, you've probably seen this yourself, there are some changes now. In the old days, in the monitor business, you'd see constant pressure on price in monitors, commoditizing eventually down to the $140 monitor. But what has begun to happen is we've got better streaming video and other technologies which support it. We're now finding some recontenting in monitors. Things are getting actually better. And we're getting some of that market back now. Now, we anticipate that the LCD TV market, which is a very, very large one here, it's going to follow similar dynamics to other markets that we've seen out there, except that the rate at which the movie gets played will be at a much faster speed in LCD. Now, this market is not like MagTape. Your MagTape was when we owned it, was a business that was essentially a technology that was dying. It was an end-of-life technology. This is not an end-of-life technology. This is a fabulous business with great growth prospects, and it's going to be around for a long, long time to come. So we want to be in this market, and we want to be in this market with a force. And yes, we all know, I mean, the nature of the beast is you're going to get pricing pressure in this marketplace, and it'll probably follow some of the same patterns as we see in monitors. But eventually stability comes in and pricing power comes back and recontenting happens and these turn out to be great businesses. And so the question is, how do we participate in these markets and create a sort of a Scotch tape-like enduring franchise in optical? That's the question that we pose. There is, by the way, as we all know, lots of turbulence at the bottom of the market. As new players come in, they bubble up and sometimes they succeed and sometimes they die. Let's go to the marketplace now. This is a technology we invented, Beth, this micro-replicated optical film. And then we made something better, DBEF, and then we actually put these things in sandwiches and combinations to produce this kind of better brightness. And this is current 3M product focus. By the way, the vast majority of the money made in this market is made there. But the growth is down here. This is where the market is pointing at the moment. And for 3M to have the chance to build an enduring franchise in this, it has got to participate down here. We have all of these technologies. We have all of the capacity. It's something we can almost turn on at will. And we have decided that we are going to enter this market as a means of participating in it and maintaining our market leadership. Talk for a minute about acquisitions. You know, a lot of people think this is just about buying volume, but it's not. Acquisitions help your growth, they help your strengthen your base, and in particular they do these things. They can give you product white space fill-in, they might facilitate entry into a new marketplace or a new brand, or get you fast capacity, or get you into an international market you weren't in before. Here's the numbers, 18 last year, we're projecting 20 this year, so 38 acquisitions will have done. And we're pointing those acquisitions at higher growth markets. The 2006 acquisitions had projected growth rates of 14 versus the average for 3M of 7, and the 2007 ones have an average growth rate of 19. So again, these are means of lifting our average growth rate. I absolutely love this one, and you're going to see this demonstrated downstairs. So any volunteer that wants to lay in a dentist chair, something for you to look forward to, you can get your teeth scanned. And this is just a wonderful technology. It's non-invasive. There's no ionizing radiation, no x-rays or anything like that. And we can build a geometric arc of your teeth in about 10 minutes. And that can be used 10 minutes. It's video. And the extraction of geometric data from video is very, very challenging. But in any event, we can do it and have done it. And you can use this to build bridges and crowns or orthodontics as well as single paths. We talked earlier about our EBOs. How are they going? Let's sort of give you a little bit of report card on. We actually formed 7, I think it was in total. I can't count evidently. 6. Filtration, food safety, minings and minerals, track and trace, renewable energy, and oil and gas. And by the way, this year, these are growing at about 20%, 23% actually is the number. And they're about $1 billion sales. And in the forecast going forward, they are growing at about 20% a year. So they will also be another great contributor to our growth story. If we just take renewable energy and look at the various forms of that. We formed a renewable energy EBO, working on solar, biofuels, and wind, pulling off all these various technologies that we have from our periodic table, leveraging our capabilities to build new businesses. Let's just concentrate a little bit more on solar. These are different kinds of arrangement, different kind of technologies used for different kinds of ratings. This is a 25 kilowatt one. This is up to 30 megawatts. This is above 50 megawatts. Using different kinds of technologies, and this is one specialist application, military application. But the point is, down here, these are the kind of characteristics we need. UV stability in all these materials up here. Scratch resistance, self-cleaning capabilities, moisture resistant, anti-cracking, no yellowing, and so on and so forth. And we have all of the technologies that supply this in these particular market spaces. Going right from lens films, to just environmental testing that we've been doing for the last 60 years. And with that, I'm going to hand over the podium for a few minutes to Inge. He's going to talk to us a little bit about international, and then I'm going to come back and talk to you a little bit more about supply chain. So, Inge.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, George, and good afternoon. My name is Inge Thulin, and I'm the Executive Vice President for International Organization. And what I thought I would do here in the next couple of minutes is to give you a little bit of overview of the international operation. First of all, give you the baseline of size and how we operate, the past and current performance, and then the direction for the future in terms of where we are going with the business. So first of all, in terms of size, you can see here that we are basically 62% of the total company in terms of sales revenue. And last year that meant $13.6 billion in sales and an operating income of $3.7 billion. We operate in 65 subsidiaries, and from a geographical perspective, we organized in Latin America, Canada, Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific. We have 40,000 employees around the world and are growing as we speak, very much due to the acquisitions we are doing. And by definition, this is our biggest growth platform for the company as we move ahead. You can see here when we combine Latin America and Canada, it's a size of $2 billion, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, $5.4 billion, and Asia Pacific, $6.2 billion. Committed focus on growth and operational excellence have been the key driver for recent performance. And that has been done through a couple of things. First of all, very clear growth targets of 2.5x IPI in all subsidiaries around the world. Focus on share gain and penetration in West Europe, developed APAC, and in Canada. Accelerate expansion in international with a specific corporate strategy around BRIC P. So you know BRIC is there. We added P to it, which is Poland. Closer to the customers to a decentralized and localized organization. And then finally, Lean Six Sigma have helped us a lot in terms of driving productivity in our international organization, as that gave us the opportunity to speak with one voice and one language all over the world, which was great for us in terms of replication. So that is type of have delivered results for us over the last couple of years of a sales revenue of 10% CAGR and a 15% CAGR in terms of operating income. So that's where we're coming from. And how we do this is through the subsidiary network, which is 65 wholly owned subsidiaries all over the world. And if they have very specific targets for each subsidiary and each country, they're also part of the total 3M network of the businesses. So we are able to take care of local customers, but also be able to take care of global customers and transnational customers that is working all over the world. And I will show you an example in a second relative to what we do in terms of supply chain and R&D investment. Now, when we look upon the growth dynamics, you can see here in terms of where we stand today in terms of current sales and where the sales will come for the future. So you can see that Middle East Africa, Central East Europe, developing APAC, and Latin America have fantastic growth in terms of percentage. But you also see the importance of West Europe, Canada, and developed APAC in terms of where we're going for the future. And this picture is important in order for us to understand that we have a different model in between developed economy and developing economy. And as you probably know, as we speak, even West Europe today is growing with 6% local currency growth for us. So we have a model that is working in both economies. Now, George showed you this one in terms of the rake that we have laid out for the company. And for us, that's very important in terms of grow the current core business, complementary acquisitions that are helping us a lot in international, and build new businesses through EBOs. And for us then in international, we can take all those three elements and yes, execute them. And what we have done for the last 4 years is that we have linked that into what we call the cornerstones of the international plan. And the cornerstone is important because that is how we operate the international operation. So all subsidiaries around the world are linked up to the plan that we have, and that is a key element of us being able to execute. So we have portfolio management, the geographic expansion, brand and reputation building, R&D and supply chain localization, and then finally the human capital plan. And we look upon the playbook. The important thing here is, first of all, in the big element of portfolio management, the geographic expansion, is to expand geographically, of course, but also to optimize the portfolio in the developed economies. Make sure we decide where to play and how to win. And one thing that is important here is the borderless customer success, which means that we can take care of customers wherever they are in the world because they have big expectation of us despite location. So we can do that on global and transnational account. And we can also meet the local needs in terms of development of new product that is meeting the local needs in the market. And we can play the big 3M. All divisions, all businesses are into the subsidiaries. We take what is there and we go to market with that. Brand and reputation building, very important for us to build strategic and local brands. And I will show you in a second how we now have added local brands into the portfolio, which give us a good base in terms of both protect the business, but also play bigger into the countries. Well, of course, is to manage the brand pyramid and make sure that we manage the margins as we go into the pyramid. R&D and supply chain localization, George and Pat talk about that, financial optimization through strategic investment. We are looking now to move closer to the customers, simplify the process, better responsiveness, and of course, improve the productivity level as we go. And then finally, the human capital planning, which is about, of course, compensation for performance and leadership for growth, and make sure that all employees are just aligned around all the corporate initiatives so there is no gaps of what we try to accomplish. Now, if we look upon portfolio management and geographic expansion, as the international will continue to grow, you will also see that as part of that pie that the developing economies will grow. And you can see, as we have moved the last couple of years, 26 to 28, to estimate this year to 31%. In the next 5 years, that will be 41%. So there is a shift in the whole portfolio in between developed and developing, but both are growing very well, and we have a very good model to execute in both economies. Now, why do we have a good position in developing economies? Well, as you know, the way the developing economies are migrating, starting often with infrastructure. After infrastructure, industrial business are migrating. After that, the middle class is moving up, and then healthcare spending is going up. If you think about that and go back and look upon the whole portfolio we have as a company, every step of the way in this evolution we can play, and that is the opportunity for us as we move ahead. Now, as you all know, we launched the BRIC P strategy like 3 or 4 years ago. And we are now taking that to the next level. BRIC P is working very well for us, and there's a reason for that. The reason is we have been in those countries for a long, long, long time. We didn't jump into BRIC because someone thought there is a big macroeconomic movement coming there. So what we are doing now, we are taking this to the next level, and we take exactly the same initiative we have had at BRIC P. We're launching it into 6 new subsidiaries. New subsidiaries in terms of strategic direction, not new subsidiaries for us. And you can see here it's Ukraine, Turkey, Dubai, Kazakhstan, Vietnam, and Indonesia. And we call that plus. Plus is Latin, means more. So it's very inclusive. You can add as you go, but we will use exactly the same corporate strategy as we move ahead. Those countries have a 1.5 trillion US dollar GDP collectively, and are growing 8 to 10%. So you need to be there, you need to be in early, and you need to capitalize on that. Now, let's come back to BRIC P. What we did was we accelerated investment in BRIC P the last 4 years. But reality is we have done business there since 1952, 1 year before I was born, we had a wholly owned subsidiary in Brazil. So George and I and Pat was in Brazil this year and had a 55 years anniversary of the wholly owned subsidiary. So we have been there for a long time, meaning we know the market, we are very local, we know how to do business, and we also know how not to do business. And you can see here, even for Russia, where we went to business in the beginning of 60s, beginning of 60 for China, India, and Poland. We've been there for a long time. So the BRIC P, we have very deep roots, meaning we can really harvest when the big explosion is coming, which is helping us a lot. And that is the same now as we're investing for the future. You can see we have been in some of those countries for a long time, build infrastructure, are in place, can now harvest on it as we move ahead. So that's an important thing. And important to know that this is not type of the flavor of the year, flavor of the month. We've been for a long time and we are committed. Now let's go to the next portion of our cornerstones, brand and reputation building. For us, we have some very powerful strategic brands in 3M, Post-it, Scotch-Brite, etc. But we have also some very local good brands that have incredible power in the local market. And we started some year back to move in this direction by, as you probably remember, acquisition of Viscoplast. But we have other ones like Durex, that is a brand in Brazil, very well known in the tape area, very good power brand in Brazil. Now you can see as we move ahead and during the latest strategy under your leadership, we have added a lot into the pyramid. A lot of local acquisitions with very strong local brands. So what we will do, we will be able to build regional presence through acquisitions. So we are now not only playing up here in the pyramid, we're able to play here and also being in this portion of the pyramid and play a bigger game all over the world. So that's very important. And here you see example of Neoplast, which was done in Thailand by Brad Sauer. You see here another one in healthcare in Chile. You see it's a Unitech acquisition in Brazil. And there you have one that was done by Joe Harlan in India for electronic communication. So we're broadening it big time, and this is helping us in terms of play bigger games in around the world. R&D and supply chain localization. Our customers, specifically global ones, have expectation of us of the same responsiveness everywhere around the world. So they expect us to be there in terms of R&D specifically. And we are moving big time, and as you know, we have today 34 laboratories around the world. And we open more customer technical centers. And you can see on this chart that we have Japan and Germany, that is the two biggest ones in terms of real technology platforms. But a lot of centers of excellence are in place, both in the big countries in Europe, as well as in Singapore and Korea. And now we are expanding into China, India, Russia, etc. This is a key element for us in order to be able to deliver the plan in the next couple of years. Now, if we look upon supply chain is important due to the fact that we need to simplify the complexity. We need to improve the responsiveness and improve the customer service. And this is how it looked like today. But if you go back and think about the growth dynamic chart of where the future will be, this is how we're investing for the future. First of all, out in Asia, big expansion going in Singapore, Vietnam, China, India, and in fact, I also put Russia Far East into this one due to all the movement that is happening in the automotive industry. You will also see, if you go back on this chart, a consolidation in West Europe. You saw that went from multiple points to 4 points. We need to make sure we capitalize on Middle East Africa and Central East Europe, and we will do that by investing in Middle East, Turkey, Russia, Poland, and the whole way up to Estonia in the Baltic Sea. And then finally, Central America and Brazil have an expansion into what we call the Latin America area. And then finally, the human capital planning, which is a key element for us. And of course, all people are talking about recruiting, retaining, and enabling the best people. We have to do that, and a lot of the growth is coming in markets where there is a big competition around the best people. But I think also important thing for us is to move the knowledge transfer from developed economy out to emerging and developing economy. Make sure that we move the knowledge that we have so we can execute the plan. And then, as you can see, we have a relentless focus on productivity. And for us in international, we have a target of productivity improvement of 5% in the front office, but 8% in the back office. So we would like to invest in the front in order to make sure that we can grow. So if you're in the support and staff function, you have a tougher target than if you're in the front end. And we've been driving that now for a couple of years. So finally, before George is coming up and talk about operational excellence. The summary is international continue to grow and to expand. We don't see a slowdown, and we are well positioned to continue to do that. And it will be done by penetration and market share gain in developed economies, and it will be through the BRIC P and the PLUS strategy in the developed countries. Supply chain and brand and product localization is important for us, of course, as we move ahead. And strategic acquisitions that will provide local relevant brands and product portfolio will help us. And as you saw in your chart, we have done quite a number of them, and it's helping us quite a bit in order to have a better play in the international area. And then it's all about customers. So we think we can execute the plan by having a focus on the customer, understand the customer, and roll that back to good solution for us. So I think the message is there's growth possibilities in all corners of the world, and we are very well positioned, and I think we have a track record to know how to do it, and we will continue to do it. So by that, I give it over to George.
Thanks, Inge. I want to talk a little bit about operational excellence now, and in particular some of the things that have been going on in the supply chain, give you some ideas of what's happening. We think this is a key element of financing the growth program that we've got going, trying to find ways to drive out working capital, trying to find ways of improving efficiency. These are the things that are going to lubricate and pay for the supply chain and growth programs that we're talking about. And many of you know, I've talked about this before, there's some history here. 3M's supply chains really evolved by moving products from plant to plant to plant as a means of minimizing capital expenditure. And typically when the business became successful, what we did is then we added to that incremental, we added capacity in that incremental supply chain. And the net product was, right now, the average time to traverse a global supply chain is about 100 days. For us to get raw material from the entrance to a plant to a customer overseas is about 100 days. And this often involves multiple plant hops, often backward and forward between plants, sometimes even across continents. And you can imagine the consumption of energy and working capital that produces. It does a lot of things. Drives up inventory, it's led to expensive and flexible machine tools and so on and so forth. And a lot of air freight, manual intervention, and expediting are normal in this kind of model. And we get complications of the picture because we have large numbers of SKUs, large numbers of end markets, all the things that we're trying to help improve. And the ultimate goal is this one, is to make it close where we sell it. So here's what we're going to do or have been doing. We're actually already making some pretty good progress. In 2000, we've opened these plants, three in China, one in Korea, one in Russia. This one's almost finished now. These will be done. And this one in Poland and this one in India. And there's another couple coming up, one in Poland and one in China that will be done in 08. Now, this was relatively easy to decide where these plants went, because we had demand there, there was a need there, so it was easy for us to sort of identify where these plants should go. But we had other challenges that I'm going to come to in just a minute on our hubs, but I forgot this was on here. I wanted to show you what happens when you build this plant in Korea to the supply chains. This is how it originally was. We mostly serve the world from markets here in the United States. And you can see the length of these supply chains. But when we built the plant in Korea, this is what happened. And it produced a 30% reduction, a 1,000-mile reduction in the average distance of the supply chain for about roughly a one-third reduction in working capital in this particular supply chain. This is what we are doing. Actually, the results on this one were even better than what we showed here, because we had some supply in Britain as well. But in the interest of simplicity, we put it this way. Now, this is great. You know, when you go back to these kind of plants here, it's impossible for a business to know exactly which markets are going to expand, which products are going to expand. You have to have a sort of more general concept that works on a broader, more global scale. And now, plan here is this concept of the super hub. So if you think about a particular market, where that might grow, and what the service requirements are in that market, you can draw a set of contours around that market, the kind of one-day service contours, two-day service contours, three-day service contours. And if you can then put inside those contours manufacturing plants, large manufacturing plants, that are in simultaneously low-cost and low-tax locations, this is what we're going to do. They are our hubs. These hubs, by the way, will be typically $400 million to $1 billion of sales value of goods produced. Obviously, they'll be planned based on regional sales growth, lots of benefits, shared infrastructure, economies of scale, lots of things that come along with this. These things will be located typically, there's one going up in China right now, Southeast Asia, and one in the Middle East, We're still working on these two locations. So this is the kind of concept. These plants, by the way, will look about the size of the Hutchinson plant that you're going to go see tomorrow. Million square foot plants, 750,000 square foot plants, that kind of size of investment. Pat showed this slide earlier. Massive opportunities in this, not just for lubrication, but in accelerating growth. Yes, cost reduction is just lower inventory, but in finding ways to really lubricate our penetration in the market, some great opportunities in this particular initiative. Perhaps the single most key initiative that we're doing in the company. Bringing it all together, a summary here. I just wanted to pause for a moment and tell you the state of our portfolio. We divided our businesses into these three classes: on course, workable solutions, reposition. These guys are doing well. These have a little bit of repair work to be done. These folks have got a challenged business model or technology. Stuff that's very dependable, on course, doing well, is about 82% of our sales weight and 83% of our operating income. And it classifies into medical supplies, commercial graphics, a whole bunch of businesses you know very, very well. Businesses that have got some temporary issues they're wrestling with, things like electronic interconnects, industrial minerals, filtration, optical films, form about 15% of our sales weight and about 16% OI. And then there's a small number of businesses, personal care, touch, and perhaps one or two small things that we're working on and doing very, very well, by the way, at repairing these businesses. I'm really pleased with the way that's going. But they are at least a relatively small piece of our portfolio. So most of the stuff that we've got is working well. And even in those things that are not working as well as we'd like, they have margins which are well above typical comparable companies in their spaces. Targets. Here's the local currency organic growth targets. They changed a little bit from 18 months ago. Some went up, some went down. But fundamentally, the same sort of banded range. Here's our local currency six-quarter average, organic, and when we include acquisitions. And if you see what acquisitions are doing to us here, growing up some pretty spiffy growth rates. In Jean's business, 14.4% growth rate. In Brad's, 12.3%. But even pretty good growth rates in Moog business and 3M overall, 7.9. This particular one, Electron Communication, Joe's business, is pressed on by a lot of end-of-life flex circuits and things like that that are bleeding off in addition to him building sales. But great leverage in his operating income. Now, you can imagine in presentations like that, there are always some things we left out. You know, what did we forget? What did we ignore? What do you think we should have poked at that you, but you haven't seen. And there are a few of them. We obviously recognize that for every supply chain need, there's a corresponding systems need. But it makes no sense to start putting a lot of money into systems until you've leaned out this supply chain. It's pointless modeling a hairball. So that's the way you do it. You get this supply chain sorted out. Where it's appropriate, you'll put systems in as they're going in. Only then do you do, if you think it's worthwhile, do a full integrated systems investment. Pat said this earlier, we've been going on a steady diet of plant closures, no big bangs, things come up and we've dealt with them, so no big bangs expected. Don't think we're going to be announcing, you know, some 20 plant closure. It's not going to happen. And as Pat also stressed, a few small divestitures where we think they're not core or they're below critical mass. So summary, last chart, long-term business summary. Growth plans are in place. The activities taking place to grow greater than twice IPI. We retain our commitment to double-digit earning growth. Pat said that. Also, our premium returns and premium margins. We're still very much committed to that and seem to have found a way to do that. And you've seen already some indicators of us moving into faster-growing market spaces. The EBOs that we kicked off 18 months ago, 20 months ago, making great progress, look like they're going to make a great contribution to our company. And the supply chain improvements are beginning to happen. You can see the plants going up. You can see the investments being made. And massive tax opportunities abound here if we do this particular part of it right. So 3M, great company, but a great company that we're going to make even greater. It's a fabulous place to work. It's a fabulous technology house. and we're extraordinarily pleased with the progress that we're making. And in another few short years, this will be one of the great, great manufacturing companies of the world. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll pass the podium back to Matt.